So we're continuing. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 29. And we'll discuss together this morning text number 39. We did a little review yesterday with this series of verses leading up to this section. In a sense, summary of the many chapters of the topics of the yoga system, how the yoga system connects with bhakti, and they're actually one thing, and they're meant to be one thing in the Satya Yuga era. Particularly relevant for this morning's verse. In the process of for achieving spiritual perfection is meditation. So then, meditation on what? And what is it? And does meditation simply mean you go somewhere and sit somewhere and do some meditation and then there's the rest of your life? Or in bhakti yoga, does meditation upon the Supreme Lord mean whatever it is that you're doing, wherever it is that you're going, wherever the senses extend out there into the field of the material energy for service to Krishna, the mind is upon Krishna? The answer is the second one. It's not just go off somewhere. It's there is a practice, a sadhana, for bringing the mind to Krishna through that meditation process. It's described in the earlier chapters, just like it's described in chapter 6 of Bhagavad Gita. But the fruit of that is engaging the mind in Krishna thought and engaging the senses in practical service to Krishna. Same message. Different yuga, different form, same essence. So then the verses we discussed yesterday were different divisions of this absolute truth upon whom we meditate, and then understanding the Brahman and Paramatma feature are part of that Supreme Person, understanding the time energy is part of that Supreme Person, or an extension of his existence into this realm. And then a third verse, yesterday's verse 38, the forms of Vishnu, the Purusha avatar, forms of the Lord. He is the support of everything and everyone. He, at the final phrase, he causes every being to be annihilated by another, indicating, we discussed this Vritrasura message to Lord Indra. Someone brings something into being, mother and father bring, if you recall from Bhagavad Gita, this is the consciousness of the Asura. Life is simply a combination of male and female, and that's it. There's nothing more. And this is to understand there is something more. And that is the cause of the ability of man and woman to produce a child, and the cause of some living entity to bring the destruction of the body. Behind that beginning and ending causation, there's the Supreme Person, Lord Vishnu. So he's behind everything. He's within everything. And meditation, dhyan, is to fix the mind in that understanding, and through the act of devotion, not only one can fix the mind, one can see the Lord. That is, if he chooses to disclose his form. And he chooses according to the reciprocation, or as reciprocation, of affection for those who have affection for him. So that's this morning's verse, which reads, no one is dear to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Nor is anyone his enemy or friend. But he gives inspiration to those who have not forgotten him and destroys those who have. Sounds like a verse from Bhagavad Gita. Who knows the verse from Bhagavad Gita? Sarvaham, Sarvabhutanam, Nami Dvesha Ostina Priya. Dvesha and Priya. He's not averse to anyone, he's not holding anyone Priya, or especially, I like this one, I don't like that one. I don't want to get into a discussion on the topic of the fall of the jiva, but there are some people that say jivas don't fall. And with that idea, jivas don't fall, there's just some living entities that are eternally conditioned, that's it. And there's some living entities that are eternally liberated, and that's it. And one response to that notion is, that's very interesting, that means the Supreme Lord is capricious. He's whimsical. Some of you just, you know, go to hell. Some of you, you're dear to me. But that's the opposite of what the scripture says in Bhagavad Gita and in this verse specifically. So what's the operative principle? The operative principle is how living entities regard him. Let's hear what Prabhupada writes. Purport. Forgetfulness of one's relationship with Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the cause of one's repeated birth and death. He says it again. A living entity is as eternal as the Supreme Lord, but due to his forgetfulness, he is put into this material nature and transmigrates from one body to another, and when the body is destroyed, he thinks that he is also destroyed, just as the demoniac nature is described in Bhagavad Gita. That's it. At the end of this life, that's it. What's the professor that Prabhupada met in Moscow?
Katowski.
Professor Katowski. Swamiji, at the end of this life, everything is finished. Professor of Indology. After all, at the end of this life, everything is finished. So all there is the body. The body comes into being by combination of man and woman, and then something causes the destruction of the body, and that's it. So what's life? It's almost like Buddhism. It's just a series of meaningless events. There's no meaning. It's just a series of meaningless events that has the beginning of material and it has the end of destruction of the material. And that's it. And then there's others that, you know, go a little bit further and a little bit further, but not too much further. Then, so there's another idea that says, after this life, there's only two destinations, up or down. And that's it. You go to the good place, or you go to the bad place. And that's it. Where were we before this opportunity? Don't ask that question. Souls are eternal. So if they're eternal this way, then they're eternal that way. So where was the soul before this life? Don't ask that question. Then there's so many ideas. There isn't a soul. This is kind of like, you know, anyway, my memory of old age is showing. The Cardinal Danelio saying animals have no soul. Where does it say that in the Bible? Cardinal Danelio. No answer. Just the distinction between human life and animal life is humans have a rational faculty. Animals don't. You know, certainly one can argue that animals do, but maybe not as refined, but they have rational faculty. And but so if that's the distinction, then the soul is just rational faculty. Matter. Rational faculty. Then there's this other idea among some persons. So if you take the life of an animal, it's no problem because he has no rational faculty. So then with that reasoning, supposing there's some people that are really poor in their rational faculty, they can be chopped too. Because they have no soul. Because they have no rational faculty. That's quite irrational. And that's the cardinal of church. And there's so many other very curious ideas. You don't have a soul. There's another one. You don't have a soul until you accept Christ. Then you get eternal life. But before that, there's no eternal life. So same idea with that notion, okay. Then those persons that haven't accepted Christ, they're also eligible for dinner on your plate because they have no soul. Because they haven't accepted Christ. They don't have eternal life. Interesting. The implications of these ideas are not carefully thought through. It's, you know, faith in something. So everybody has faith in something because faith is intrinsic to the soul. So if you don't have faith in Krishna Tattva, then you'll have faith in something else. So what's behind the not being able to understand Krishna Tattva is forgetfulness, so aversion to the Supreme. So then we're given forgetfulness. We're given some other idea. And there's the varieties and combinations of varieties and sub varieties, unlimited. Everyone has some faith in something. Actually, this forgetfulness of his relationship with Lord Vishnu is the cause of his destruction. Anyone who revives his consciousness of the original relationship receives inspiration from the Lord. This does not mean that the Lord is somebody's enemy, someone else's friend. He helps everyone. One who is not bewildered by the influence of the material energy is saved. And one who is bewildered is destroyed. It is said, therefore, Harim vinana shritim taranti. No one can be saved from the repetition of birth and death without the help of the Supreme Lord. It is therefore the duty of all living entities to take shelter at the lotus feet of Vishnu and thus save themselves from the cycle of birth and death. Repetition is necessary for clear understanding. So these messages are in different ways expressing what's really required. So let's do a little question-answer session. The root cause of all suffering is ignorance. The primordial ignorance is from which all other ignorances come?
Material identification.
Huh?
Material identification.
Material?
Identification.
Yeah, material identification. So ignorance of, the primordial ignorance is ignorance of?
Relationship with
Krishna. Yeah, relationship with the Supreme Lord. So ignorance, you know, like you ignore. You ignore. Feel like children may sometimes ignore something. I mean, adults sometimes ignore something. Living entities are in this world because of their ignorance of the Supreme Lord. So then next question, what's the cure for that ignorance? It's, you can say knowledge. Knowledge specifically. Knowledge of the source of everything. Knowledge of the source of everything is, according to Vedanta, that's the absolute truth. Or tattva gyan, knowledge of the absolute truth, Krishna tattva. There's a nice verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita that says the qualification of spiritual master. It doesn't necessarily Diksha Guru can mean Shiksha Guru. One who is qualified to give Shiksha or transcendental instruction doesn't depend upon material circumstance. Kiba Vipra, Kiba Nyasi, Shudra Kini Noi, Yehi Krishna Tattva Veti, Se Guru Hoy. The spiritual master, the qualification for spiritual master is Krishna Tattva. Knowledge of Krishna, and Krishna Tattva means all these things that these previous verses have spoken about, like, you know, Brahman and Paramatma and time and the Vishnu forms and the causes of things that in this world behind them there's Vishnu. That's all part of Krishna Tattva. It's part of understanding the absolute truth. So while we're going through our life, whether we're chanting japa, doing our sadhana, reading Bhagavatam, doing our sadhana, worshipping the deity, doing our direct activities of bhakti, or not doing our direct activities of bhakti, but doing our duties of life, going to school, going to work, living in the home, this and that, the duties of life. Whether it's our direct devotional activities or the natural outflow of wishing to serve Krishna and being given different services by which we can serve Krishna according to our nature. Either or, whether it's the yoga system, meaning, you know, the meditational, the mystic yoga system, Satya Yoga, or Bhakti Yoga, which is, you know, Devahuti with her family duties, or us with our whatever it is duties. So whether it's the internal cultivation or the external extending the senses into the field of material energy activity, Krishna Tattva must be front and center. We use this phrase, keep Krishna in the center. In practical terms, what does that mean? From the strength of sadhana, then Krishna is in the center while we're doing our other activities. Just as we were discussing the first evening that I was here, this definition of bhakti. Sarvapadi vinirbhuktam tatparatvena nirmalam rishikena rishikesha sevanam bhakti ruchate. Or madgatena antaratmana, with mind absorbed within upon Krishna, engaging in practical activities. Same, you know, different Sanskrit language that is saying essentially these two things. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, engage in your prescribed duty and always think of me. All of those saying the same thing. There's these two elements. The internal cultivation and the external performance of duty. The external performance of duty is not the essence of the message of Bhagavatam, it's not the essence of
Krishna tattva. It's necessary, but it's not the essence. We don't live atheistic life, or we live theistic life. We live our life according to the injunctions of scriptures, but that's not the essence. Being a pious person, a theistic person, is not the essence. The essence is the goal of life. Always engaged in Krishna service. So what is, again, what does that mean? Be engaged in Krishna service. It's these two things, the internal and the external. Simultaneously. So let's take a look at another quiz question or essence question. With those external activities, whatever they may be, just like in Nectar Devotion, there's a list of 64 items of devotional service. At the end of that list of 64, Rupa Goswami says there's one thing that's the essence or the purpose behind all of them. Who knows the answer? What's the essence or purpose behind these external things?
Always remember Krishna and never forget.
Yeah.
Love Krishna.
No, specifically, when there's love for Krishna, then you'll always remember Krishna. If there isn't love for Krishna, your mind is going to go somewhere else, even when you're doing something. So the purpose behind it, specifically, is there's a verse in Padma Purana. And there's other Sanskrit terms that say the same thing. Smartavya satatam Vishnur. That's what you're supposed to do. And then the opposite, never forget Krishna. Najatu chit. Najatu chit. Never forget him. The purpose behind them is to bring the mind to Krishna. And bring the mind to Krishna becomes always when there's love. It's just like whatever you're attached to, that's where your mind goes. You know, the classic is, you know, the romance of, you know, the young boy and young girl. And he's thinking of her and she's thinking of him, wherever they are. Brushing their teeth, sitting in the classroom, talking with their friends, whatever's going on. Their mind, his mind is on her and her mind is on him. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Because whatever you're attached to, or the miser, the person who is ambitious for wealth, wherever they are, they're thinking of how to get money. Whatever you're attached to, your thoughts go. Without giving other examples, whatever you're attached to. So it's certainly correct to say the prayojana is Krishna prema. But the purpose behind sadhana wise, the purpose behind the vidhis, the rules and nishedhas, the do's and the do nots, is always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. And something, we don't do something because it leads to forgetfulness of Krishna. We do something because it leads to remembrance of Krishna. Very simple. During our the Christmas weekend in Chicago, we discussed the six limbs of surrender, Sharanagati, and the first two. What are the first two? Anukoyasya sankalpa pratikoyasya varjanam means that which is favorable for bhakti you accept, that which is unfavorable for bhakti you reject. Very simple. Now, back to the purport, forgetfulness. Where does forgetfulness come from? It comes from Vishnu. Why does Vishnu cover the living entity with forgetfulness? Answer, they want to forget. Why does Vishnu give remembrance? They want to remember. So there's the desire to remember, and then there's, from that comes the vidhis. It works the other way. The vidis help us to remember. Somebody was describing this. Dravida was describing this about Vishnu Jan Swami, you know, a celebrity in ISKCON in the early days. It was going on Harinam Sankirtan in Los Angeles, and then later on with the Radha Damodar bus party, you know, for 10 hours a day. You know, his arms were really big because he just was playing drum all day long. He had his fingers taped with tape, all, you know, I guess he took them off at night, but, you know, anyway. And he was always enthusiastic. So somebody asked him, Dravida said, "Are you really always enthusiastic?" He said, "No. But I understand from experience that if I act with enthusiasm, enthusiasm comes." It's just so enthusiasm may also be a sadhana or a cultivation. It's the first item in the six things favorable is utsahan. Shadbhir bhaktir prasidyati. So even if I'm not feeling enthusiastic, then be enthusiastic anyways. Because it will lead to the release of the covering or diminishing of the covering, and then natural enthusiasm. It's a principle to follow. So same with Krishna sees, because he's in the heart of the living entity, he's in our hearts, if he sees we wish to be with him, it'll give remembrance. And if he sees, no, then he'll bring forgetfulness. And the point of the purport is it's that forgetfulness that brings destruction, and it's the remembrance that gives freedom from destruction. It doesn't mean that the body will never die if you become a nice devotee. You'll live in this body forever. It'll never get old, never get wrinkled, never get a pain. And never die. That's not the indication. But rather, the connection with Krishna, the nearness to Krishna, will, as time passes, time energy works differently in the life of a devotee. As the clock ticks, tick, 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 time passes, we're closer to Krishna, closer to Krishna. Time acts differently for a non-devotee. Tick, 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 you're closer to death. We discussed this yesterday briefly because it was in verse 37, how the time energy acts. And the time energy is Krishna's energy, and Krishna reciprocates with living entities by supplying forgetfulness or supplying remembrance. And it's not that Krishna is partial. Very important. Krishna is kind to everyone. Really? What about the people that are in ignorance? Is that kindness? That's a classic question. Why is there a suffering in this world? Why does God permit this? He's all good. He's all powerful. Why is there suffering in this world? There are different iterations of that question. How is that his kindness? Because when someone suffers, they blame God. And when someone enjoys, they take credit. They may also say thank you, but they take credit for their piety and their good work and so forth. Commonly, there's exceptions, but that's common. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains very clearly the sadasad yoni janmaso, the good and the bad, are the product of the living entity's free will. Purushat prakriti stohi bhunkte prakriti jan gunan kananam gunasango sya sadasad yoni janmasu. According to our disposition for enjoyment, Purushat prakriti stohi bhunkte prakriti jan gunan, because of our inclination or proclivity, our tendency, for enjoying matter this way, that way, we're implicated, we're entangled, we're conditioned to the laws of material nature and its binding forces. And then the reactions come for how we've engaged ourselves. So pious is you go up, and impious is you go down, and we're responsible for the up and the down. Krishna's not responsible. We're responsible for our destiny, our ill fortune, good fortune. We're creating our own destiny. It's not like we're independent. He's the supreme. He's seeing. He wishes well for us, but we say, no. I want to be independent. But you'll suffer. I want to be independent. Give me the chance. I want to be independent. A big struggle. I'm leaving. Then forgetfulness, the root cause of all suffering, and the suffering climax is the destruction of the body and everything that goes along with it. All of our accumulated possessions, what we think is mine, that's also taken along with the body. Everything. The root of that, it's very clear in the purport, it's forgetfulness. So what's the opposite? Remembrance. Remembrance doesn't mean the body and the objects accumulated during life are not taken from you. You can live forever. There's something like 30 years ago, Niranjana Swami and I were serving together in Boston and New England. He was the president of the Boston Temple, and I was the regional secretary in New England. And somebody wanted us to go see, there was some idea of developing, through the use of technology, some way of showcasing or displaying or conveying the message of Krishna consciousness. So we went to some, I don't even know who it was, some other religious organization, Christian organization, that was doing that. They had like a little theater. This is 30 years ago. Technology has, improved, I guess. But, like a wraparound sound, and so you go sit down, and the lights go out, and then there's this scene of a family sitting together enjoying, and then they're praying to God in their religious life, and then they get up and they get in the car and they go somewhere, and as they go somewhere it's night, and you see headlights coming towards the car, and then you hear this big crash and the light goes out. So like they died, and then this nice classical music, and then the screen opens and there they are in heaven, and it's the same family with Fido under the table and the turkey on the table. So if you're follow this religion, you're going to be with your same family members looking the same way and the same everything, just like, eternal life. Interesting. Interesting, but it's not so realistic. So what does remembrance mean, and what does eternal life mean, and the product, the antidote for ignorance is knowledge, and ignorance is the root of suffering. So remembrance relieves us of our material condition. While we're in this life, we should be performing our duties of life. Whatever different stages of life, we have different duties. So we do them, but we don't identify with them. They're something that we offer to Krishna, because behind the duty or the offering to Krishna is thought of Krishna and pleasing Krishna. This is Daivi Varnashram. And then ultimately, along with that, how we live our life is very, very important, is the sadhana, just like what we're doing right now, hearing the message of Bhagavatam, so that this little light that's our natural consciousness goes on, and it's that light is now strengthened, or the flame, little flame, becomes the fire of consciousness of Krishna, affinity for Krishna. It's starting with this process of hearing, because hearing dispels ignorance. But we have to keep hearing and hearing because we have a lot of ignorance. Our ignoring Krishna tendency is really long-standing, and has cumulative effect. With, it's thick. So we have to continually hear. Last point, and I'll see if there's discussion. I'm going to develop this idea some more because I've come across something that I find is very helpful. We say, for example, that the Srimad Bhagavatam is Krishna's, none different than Krishna. We heard yesterday evening in the life of Devananda Pandit that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was scolding him. Such foolish scholarly people don't have an proper understanding that the Srimad Bhagavatam is Krishna in sound vibration form. They take it as something else, and they study it, and just like this Devananda Pandit, foolish man. He has no qualification, doesn't understand one verse of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, and he's lauded by others as a big scholar. He's a foolish man. He's audacious. He has no business speaking Srimad Bhagavatam. So Srimad Bhagavatam is Krishna himself. And the name of Krishna, each and every one of the names of Krishna is Krishna himself. Abhinatam nama namino. So there's all those potencies within Krishna's name. It should be that even one name is sufficient for spiritual perfection. Then on the other hand, somehow we're not enlightened yet. We're still in ignorance, even we're chanting and hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. The fullness of that power isn't going through. There's a blocking of that power due to offenses. And so we have to do sadhana. We have to hear again and again. And these three things that are described regularly, satatam, or nityam bhagavata sevaya, regularly, then another sustained over a long period of time, because we're thick, the covering is thick, and the third is the intention, the conviction, the faith, the extending consciousness into the activity itself, not just the behavior, but light has to be on. Consciousness touching the sound vibration. Not your consciousness is somewhere over there while the sound vibration is going on, or the hearing, or the chanting, or the associating, or the worshipping, or the intention. With faith that this is, although I'm covered, I don't have the full realization, I have faith, and faith can grow and grow and grow, and will grow if we do it properly, that this is the means of deliverance. I'm taking shelter with that spirit, with that conviction, with that intention. That revives the remembrance. That is to say, super soul sees, he or she wishes to be in relationship with me once again. Although their covering is pretty thick, I can break through that covering. I'll help them. It's exactly what's said in the purport. Without the help of Lord Vishnu, overcoming that forgetfulness is not possible because he's the source of remembrance. And one who thinks otherwise isn't going to become spiritually fit to understand tattva, to understand Krishna tattva. So then that's the ignorance position again, the forgetfulness position again. And we need mercy. And we need sadhana. We need to do and we need to receive. We need to do with right intention to be the recipient of Krishna's mercy. Can't do it alone. By design. It's a nice design. Because it means connecting with mercy. That's nice. Who would want to be liberated without a relationship with Krishna anyway? Just like be liberated. Like a light twinkling in the sky or something. Pretty boring. But relationship with Krishna, that's very nice. So the means and the end are very attractive. Still, we're distracted because our covering is very thick, and so we continue with sadhana, with faith, trying to connect, trying to keep Krishna in the center while we have our hand in our bead bag, as well as while we're doing our duties of life. And the most important one is while we have our hand in our bead bag, while we're in kirtan, while we're doing our direct devotional activity, that we're very focused on the mind upon that sound vibration and the purpose behind the activity of that sound vibration. Gradually, that sadhana awakens more and more and more the attraction for Krishna, and then more and more remembrance and more relief from our material condition. And eventually spontaneous devotional service, and then eventually love of God by Krishna's mercy. Okay, so any discussion? 7:20. You're closer. I was looking at him first, but he had his hand up first. Go ahead, Hugo.
Hi, Krishna. You mentioned that the ignorance can be removed by hearing.
Yes.
Hearing has is what is it? What is it that the internal attitude that affects hearing? Because we see that the even at different times and different people, the impact
in
of
ourselves?
Hearing is different.
Yeah. Well, even in ourselves from moment to moment,
yes.
But, you know, from person to person also.
And time to time.
Well, there's a long explanation, but a short one is, to the degree that we hold on, we have attachment to the affinity for being the enjoyer of matter, that's the inhibitor. Or the converse. The degree to which we're willing to let go of that very strong urge to be the enjoyer of matter, then the hearing is more effective. It's not just coming from frustration. That's a possibility. That's described in the first canto of Bhagavatam in relation to Dhritarashtra quits home. You know, one kind of detachment is out of frustration. I'm suffering. I don't like to suffer. It's not a very high purpose or motivation. So a higher is, I wish to purify myself, not just I wish to get out of misery. So that's mode of goodness, as opposed to, you know, frustration, mode of ignorance. And then there's, you know, keep going, higher and higher. I wish to be in my relationship with Krishna, not just I wish, these other things. So that the intention behind the hearing is very important. And the inhibitor is, even I may be a sincere person, there may be this affinity for matter that's very strong. And then, you can't just like dismiss it, go away. It doesn't go away from that so easily. It then said that we have the arduous task of continuing to cleanse with faith. And then the hearing becomes progressively more effective. Bhaktivinoda Thakur calls this, I forget the Sanskrit term, but ancient tendencies. That's the inhibitor. Since time immemorial, this aversion to Krishna. And the aversion to Krishna takes its form of, I want to be the enjoyer of Krishna's energy. I want to be in Krishna's position, the enjoyer of his energy. Enviousness towards Krishna. We want what belongs to Krishna and make it ours. Problem. Strong tendency. Ancient tendencies, he calls it. So in that atmosphere, we're hearing. Yes.
My question is a little bit twisty here.
A little bit what?
Twisty, like because.
Twisty.
Yeah, I'm having confusion in my question itself.
Oh,
the forgetfulness that, like, in purport, Prabhupada mentioned the repetition of birth and death because of forgetfulness. And the forgetfulness you mentioned, it is coming from Vishnu.
Forgetfulness is coming from Supersoul, yeah, Vishnu.
So Vishnu. So I'm talking, my question is, like, on the soul platform, where is this forgetfulness coming from? Like, what?
It's the soul. It's coming from the soul proper. Free will is not something. I'll go say it slowly. Free will would be meaningless if there's something that's causing the free will to be don't go this way, that way. It would be a meaningless phrase.
That's correct.
So free will means it's coming from the soul itself.
Right. So what is that?
What's the cause? It's the soul. Don't go to that, you know, it's somewhere. Well, what's the cause of the soul going this way or that way? It's within the soul. Otherwise, there's no free will. It's meaningless. What causes, and you ask the question again in different ways, and it's going to be the same answer. Well, what causes the soul to say, I want to be with Krishna, or the soul that says, I want to be separate from Krishna? You know, it's a material analysis of cause and effect. So behind the effect, I choose to be apart from Krishna. What's the cause of that? That's the question. Yes?
That's
and the answer is it's from the soul itself. There isn't a cause of that. The soul has this capacity, and it uses this or uses that. Uses it this way, uses it that way. It's a trick question. And I'm not going to go there and get tricked by the question.
That's what my problem is.
Yeah, that's our problem.
I couldn't.
And when I wasn't present in the room, but someone was having this discussion with Prabhupada, you know, and asking the question and again, like you wish I would allow you to do. And finally, Prabhupada said, "This is the difference between the living entity and Vishnu. Living entity is chuta." And the Supreme is Achyuta. And that we don't want to be Chyuta, we want to be Achyuta. The inability to understand the distinction, you know, what's the cause, is because of our enviousness towards Krishna. We give up that enviousness towards Krishna, then we can understand. Until we can understand, it's not something that the binary processor, the mind, is going to understand. Because we're going to keep asking the question, well, what's the cause? We're different than the Supreme Lord. We can misuse our free will. And there doesn't need to be a cause, we just misuse our free will. So put that in your processor and process it. It's coming from us. It's coming from the soul proper. There's not a cause of that outside of the soul. It's the soul.
What is the meaning of chuta and achuta?
fallible and infallible. We're fallible. Therefore, we're marginal potency. I was just listening this morning. So, two things. Marginal potency. The classic example that's used in Scripture to explain what is marginal potency is to use the example of a river and the river bank. So on one side, there's the river bank. It's land. And over on this side, there's water. There's land and there's water. And there's a place where the land meets water. The water meets the land. That's a marginal thing. So where the water meets the land, is it water or is it land? It's marginal. It's neither water nor land. That's us. The marginal living entity is conscious like Krishna is conscious, but very tiny. And therefore, depending upon the direction of where we direct our consciousness, we're on the land or in the water. We're in the internal potency or the external potency. Therefore, we're marginal potency. Tatastha Shakti. Now, the topic that I was listening to this morning was, it's a long topic, just so I just say it quickly. Jiva Goswami is analyzing the 10 subject matters of Bhagavatam, saying the 10th, which is ashraya, meaning shelter, is the shelter of everything, including, you know, the other 9 subjects of the Bhagavatam. There's this subject, that subject, and they're all sheltered by the, you know, the cause of all causes, the source of everything, is the shelter of everything. So then to illustrate that, there's these phrases that are very important and repeated in Bhagavad Gita and, you know, other scriptures, where Adiyatmika, Adidaivika, and Adibhautika. And those are entities. They're not just like disembodied forces or something. There's the living entity, there's the body, and there's the demigods that control the senses. And there's a combination of those three. The body, the sensual, the power of the senses controlled by the demigods, and the soul. And they're in a certain way, they're interdependent. Of the three, without going into the details of how Jiva Goswami explains this, it can be said, because the living entity has qualities like the Supreme Lord but very tiny, the living entity can be said, because he's conscious, the power of the senses and the body where the power of the senses resides is energized by the presence of the soul. Take the soul out of the picture, the body disintegrates. And the sensual power given by the demigods, it has no meaning. So, in one sense, the soul is the shelter, to some degree, it's modest, tiny, because we're marginal, tiny degree, of the body, the animating factor of the body, and the utility factor of this, our sensual power. So in one sense, the soul is the ashraya of the other two. But then Krishna is the shelter of the shelter of the other two. Swashrayaya swaha. He's the shelter of the shelters. He's the cause of all causes. And it fits in completely with our discussion this morning, which is the causal principle ultimately, or the shelter principle ultimately, the message of Srimad Bhagavatam ultimately, is that our consciousness should be connected with the personality of Godhead. We can be connected with others, family members and controlling personalities in the universe, the demigods, or this and that. We can navigate our way through this complex world that we live in and be transcendentalists on one basis, if we're conscious of the cause of all causes and make that connection. And the way to make the connection, and thus purifying the senses and the mind and everything, spiritualizing everything about our existence, is through bhakti. This is the Bhagavatam's message. It's all about bhakti. That's what we were saying last night. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was saying about Devananda Pandit. No, he doesn't understand bhakti at all. Because he's an offender to the bhaktas, in fact. And bhakti. And the Lord. Reciting Srimad Bhagavatam. Nonsense person. Shame on him. Big offender. He was, like, strong. So.
You said demigods control the senses.
Well, it's one of the things they do.
So, is it control is the right word, or do they influence?
They control. And just like, using an example from scripture, even the blinking of the eyelid, it's an involuntary act, or digesting of food, or whatever it is. The power comes from the demigods, and they can give it, and they can withdraw it. They control it. They're controlled, but they control a certain domain of activity as service. So they're empowered to do that. But they control.
If all senses are working fine, I'm a healthy person, right? But it is that person, that soul, who's making the decision.
Well, supposing you're making a decision and you lose your sight. Or lose your power of digestion. Or something, you know, that sensory power is withdrawn. You don't have any decision about that one. Someone else does. They can give it again. And go to a medical doctor and say, can you fix my vision? Or whatever it is. And they can do something, but it's still the sanction of the demigods, which is to pay. So, and the sanction of the demigods is dependent upon the power of the Supreme Lord under his direction to do.
The reason I asked is, if, hey, everything's fine, my senses are fine, I'm a healthy guy, now I go enjoy, hey, go sanction. Right.
So, yeah, then one can have that mentality. And if the behind that mentality is, I'm independent of Krishna, wait a while. Or you may not even have to wait a while. It could be very quick, or after a while. There's consequences for misconduct, ignoring. The consequence of ignorance is suffering. The root cause of suffering is ignorance. So for thoughtful persons, you're a thoughtful person, we're here because we're trying to be thoughtful persons, we should apply, consider very carefully. Not just because, I don't want to suffer, I want to enjoy. I want to get rid of the suffering part of life. That may be an impetus. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, that's an impetus. Relief from suffering. Pious persons turn to God when they want relief from suffering. But higher than that, relief from suffering motivation, like this question of what's behind the hearing, that makes it more effective, less effective. So, the higher position is, I've a little light went on through this process of hearing, and the sine curve, the up and down and up and down of my feeling happy, my feeling sad, and there's something I'm missing something, and that something that I'm missing is really I need to take shelter of transcendence. I need to take shelter of the cause of all causes, the source of everything. I have this eternal relationship. So as one's consciousness through association and proper conduct and so forth evolve, then my purpose changes. My sankalpa changes. My intention, my determination behind my activity changes. The Bhagavatam wishes to take us to that position again and again and again. And then it helps us with our chanting, which helps us with our carrying out our duties in Krishna consciousness. not just as pious people, where it's, you know, the sine curve is what's operating in our life. Yes.
From these three subject topics, my understanding, if I can, if you correct me if I'm wrong.
Okay.
Living entity desires.
Living entity desires.
And so far soul fulfills the desire according to his karma.
Well, not exactly fulfills desire. It reciprocates according to desire and deserve.
Through demigods.
Well, or directly, supposing it's a devotee. You're trying to be a devotee. Then it says internal potency directly.
So that's why we should surrender.
Well, that's certainly a reason. There's many reasons. Yes.
Last week we were watching a video of Prabhupada, and he said, our business is simply to love Krishna. Don't bother so much to know Krishna. So my question is, he's talking about the speculative process.
Yes, that's what he's talking about, the speculative process. Now, we want to hear about Krishna. That's devotional service. It nourishes love for Krishna. You know, that to know him is to love him. And I do, and I do, and I do. You know that one, popular song. So, the more that we hear the glories of Krishna, it serves as udipans, in Rupa Goswami's language, stimulations for ecstatic love. It's not just information. It may be, you know, at some level, it may just be information. But the power is far beyond information. It says how lovable is Krishna. So, and other times Prabhupada would say, they say that God is great, but how great he is, that they do not know. And then he would say something about the greatness. So the greatness gives impetus. At least, or I say, especially in the sadhana stage, you know, coming out of ignorance into the realm of knowledge, we require to hear the greatness of Krishna. It helps us become humble, to understand Krishna's greatness and our actual position in relation to him. And then in the love stage, it doesn't matter his greatness. You just love him. But in our present stage, hearing, you know, our, for example, in our deity worship, the deity worship Prabhupada taught is in awe and reverence. Now, in awe and reverence, it's meant to keep us from making offenses when we're worshiping the deity, and to elevate our consciousness because we have proper regard. In the spontaneous stage, it's different. But in the practice stage, it's on reverence. We need to, you know, sit straight and, you know, be attentive and hear carefully and all those things. In the spontaneous stage, just like we were hearing yesterday evening about Srivas Pandit, just hearing the words of Srimad Bhagavatam, he became ecstatic. Even the words were spoken by a nonsense person. Just hearing, he became ecstatic. Or that wonderful pastime in Haridas Thakur's life in Puglia, there was a snake charmer. And the snake charmer was playing music, and the cobra was moving. And then Ananta entered into the body of the snake charmer, the body of the serpent, and then the snake charmer started reciting the verses from the Kaliyanag, and hearing verses of the Bhagavatam from the Kaliyanag, Haridas Thakur became ecstatic and started rolling on the ground in ecstasy. Just hearing, just because spontaneous devotee. You know, that's not where our platform. For us, it's hearing these pastimes, it's purification, it's appreciating, wow. Krishna subdued the Kaliya serpent, etc., etc. Yeah?
Maharaj, yesterday and today also you referred to time as the energy of Krishna and being spiritual and reflected in the material energy.
Yeah.
My question was, what is the role of time in the spiritual world?
In the words of Jiva Goswami, it's very flexible. It's eternal, but eternal time acts in such a way to enhance Krishna's pastimes. That's all. It's his energy, and it acts just to enhance his pastimes. So, an example that he gives is, due to attachment for Krishna, when there's separation from Krishna, the gopis are feeling that one moment is 12 years or more. One moment is 12 years or more. But when they were performing rasa dance, Krishna expanded time, so it was actually, a night of Brahma, but the gopis were feeling it was just a moment, and the night's over. Very flexible. Just to enhance his pastimes. And his pastimes mean his enjoyment, and his enjoyment is the enjoyment of his devotees, and the enjoyment of his devotees is Krishna's enjoyment. So time is just very flexible to make that the enjoyment of Krishna and his devotees facilitated. That's all. Eternal time. No beginning, no end. It's a big mystery. Especially from our perspective, because we don't know, we can't even think. The mind cannot even, get around the idea of events that are eternal. We can't, that's like the infinity sign. Where does it begin and end? It doesn't. Infinity sign. No beginning and no end. So what is that? Eternality. And events that are eternal. It's just like it bounces. It doesn't go in. It's Krishna. It's eternal. Time is eternal. To facilitate Krishna's pastimes, different things happen. Very expandable, contractible, very flexible. Yes. Krishna has his own ways to purify. Practical steps?
Yeah.
Like sadhana?
Something comes some obstacle has come.
Okay.
To address that, somebody is taking some practical steps towards it. Then is it that the not where, my feeling is that now I'm saying, I don't want this purification, something like that?
No. If you take practical steps when an obstacle comes, it doesn't mean you don't want purification. It means, it could mean, I'm averse to, obstacles. I'm going to do something to get rid of this obstacle. It could be, but not necessarily. It could be Krishna wants you to do some service. So you take practical steps to address the opportunity for some service. So what's important is always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna, and be in the mood of trying to serve Krishna. Then it takes care of the other question you're asking. There was a question the other day. How will we know? Like your question yesterday evening. How will we know if what I'm doing is I'm averse to people being unhappy with me, and rather than I want to do what Krishna wants me to do? Is your remembrance of Krishna being maintained or strengthened or enhanced? That's a very simple standard. And it's gymnastic if the real purpose is I'm only interested in my comfort zone, and I want to call it, I'm interested in Krishna's happiness. It's not that elastic. It's going to break. It's mental gymnastics to to try to, you know. So the reality is, as we discussed, I responded to your question, that we're in a mixed position. We're not pure devotees, we're not non-devotees, we're in a mixed position. So we try to enhance the consciously, bring our consciousness to the contemplation of how to best address this obstacle. We try to enhance or remind ourselves the real purpose of what I'm going to do or not do has to do with what's pleasing to Krishna. We just invest in the bhakti principle and continue to do that, and it grows. And that when that grows, it displaces the other. Because ignorance just means, you know, the opposite, the absence of knowledge, or darkness means the absence of light. Or selfishness is the absence of Krishna's at the center. I become the center. And the absence of Krishna is in the center. From yesterday's discussion, your voice is really soft.
Krishna and his expansions, and his expansions are actually serving him.
Krishna's expansions are actually serving him.
So, is it like, to me it seems like he is a servant of himself. He cannot, he also needs to do some service like that.
Who is he?
Krishna.
No, he doesn't need to do anything. He's enjoying. And that's what he's doing. He's enjoying. He doesn't need to do anything. It's right in Bhagavad Gita when Krishna describes Chaturvarnamaya Srishtam. Srishtam. He's created Srishti. He's created the Chaturvarna system. Then he goes on and says, but actually I'm the Nandur.
Yeah, Krishna and his expansions both are one and the same, right? He is the same person.
Krishna's and expansions are one and the same and different. These are college questions, I call them. Yes?
I just wanted to the point that you were saying that the seeing every, looking for a relationship with Krishna in everything we do, it requires a lot of practice,
cultivation.
It requires a careful guidance, that's why, you know,
yeah,
you need to bring these teachings to the application level.
Yes, exactly, you got it.
So, I was remembering the couple of devotees who commented in the New Jersey Japa retreat that when you were speaking about Brahma's prayers to Krishna, and they said they were wondering how is it related to Japa, that we came for a Japa service, and you know. Then they realized that, oh my God, this is, I never thought like this, that, you know, these Brahma's prayers are going to help me in my japa. And, you know, they were amazed that they never attended such a japa retreat before that. And, you know, this Srimad Bhagavatam bringing to my level of application and helping my own japa, that's amazing, that, you know, they are so much appreciated. And it also helped me to relate to my japa, that how these teachings will actually, when I hear from a proper, it can help me connect with my japa also in all practical applications. So my question is that what are some of the things that, it's not a routine that, okay, weekly once come to Bhakti Riksha and you hear something and go away and then, again,
business as usual.
So bringing to the application level, what are some of the things that each of one of us can do?
What are the application points that each one of us can absorb? Is that what the word you used? What was the word?
We can practice.
Practice. Well, we'll end with this question because it comes back to your question, the first question, which is, the question is, what are the ways in which hearing can be enhanced or detracted? Are there qualities of hearing if hearing is so important. Some hearing is better, some hearing is lesser, from individual to individual, or even what. So same. It's, my response to your question is the attitude that we have while hearing should not just be an information gathering exercise. It can be commonly, you know, that's how we're trained up. We go to school for, you know, years and years and years and years and years and years and years, and we're trained up in gathering information and then putting that information in our information basket, and we're called on an exam and we can spout it back again. We get an A. Okay, you're a good student. You can go on to the next level. We're trained. It has nothing to do with the quality of life. It has everything to do with information. Information processing. It's just, I've said this, I heard this long ago, and I found it very dramatic. In India, on the federal level, or national level, there was concern about the quality of education. We had a big conference, and the keynote speaker said, in India today, education can be summed up in five words. Information, no transformation. So we shouldn't approach hearing with just gathering information, although that's how we're trained up. It's meant for transformation. And transformation, another way that Prabhupada speaks of it, is building character. So building character, the purpose of education is building character. And building character requires, from our side as hearers, I want to build my character. I want that which doesn't belong, but's there. I want to know what it is and how to relieve myself of it, and that's going to be possible through the hearing process, and also with a teacher that can help guide me in, you know, identifying that which needs to no longer be there, and the encouragement and strength and empowerment to continue what I need to do to get rid of that something. And to exercise those things that are good. The same. Accept things favorable, reject things unfavorable. So it's the answer that I have to your question, response, is it's the attitude that we carry when we're engaged in the hearing process itself permits self-improvement. There must be a willingness. I'm planning a seminar. I'm like slowly, because I'm too busy with everything else that I'm doing, but planning a seminar on this topic. Maybe it'll be the next Japa retreat. Maybe. It directly relates to, you know, the attitude, the willingness to be introspective while we're engaged in the hearing process, specifically, according to the language of Jiva Goswami, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, I mentioned it during the Japa retreat, but I'll expand it more. Anta Karana. Anta means within, and Karana means cause. So we have a subtle body, mind, intelligence, false ego, that's polluted. And it's guiding our life, the guna and karma and, you know, the contaminations. And so we have all these kinds of filters that are going on even when we're hearing. So there has to be a self-honesty factor that says, I know that. I'm in this mixed condition, and I want to become, you know, I want to go beyond that mixed condition. So if we're here on that basis, then, you know, we'll understand these are areas that I need to improve in, and that the potency of that sound vibration will help me. And the trust that I have in the person. So then there's the application part, because it's like the difference between taking a shower where you just turn the water on and stand there. Okay, now I did my shower. Or you take soap and, you know, cleanse the body while you're standing in the shower. The active application part is, I'd like, it's not passive, it's active. Devotional service is active. And it starts on the subtle before it goes to the gross. The application starts with this, you know, it starts with the quality of our hearing and the purpose behind the hearing. Antara karana, a willingness to recognize, to evaluate, examine this subtle being inside the gross body that's covering the soul. What are its qualities and faults? What are its strengths and its weaknesses? What are things that I need to do to overcome those weaknesses? And then apply myself. And it may not be, you know, the first moment after hearing it's at 100%. But according to my capacity, continue to hear, continue to apply, then there's progress. The unwanted becomes diminished, and the wanted becomes enhanced. And I feel I'm making progress. I'm encouraged. I'm getting closer to Krishna. The light's becoming brighter. My affinity for Krishna is becoming stronger, which means the affinity for matter is diminishing. Doesn't mean I quit my duties. I just, the material happiness expectation thing diminishes, and instead it's replaced with serving Krishna happiness. I'm doing the same things. That's the fruit of hearing properly. But we need to apply it, but we won't, how to enhance the applying? The right attitude in the hearing process itself. You know, answering the question, what's the goal of my life? What's really important to me? You know, in different times, we have different answers to that question. So it's good to ask the question from time to time. And you know, you refine it. Be clear what the goal is. What's really important to me. And then I can make steps to get there. With then the hearing process. It takes on a whole other purpose than putting stuff in our information basket. So I can say back and people go, wow, he can say things. Then I feel good about myself. People are saying good things about me because I can say things. The heart's still, you know, not clean. Okay, we'll end there. Thank you very much, Prabhupada.